Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Under budget, ahead of schedule.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Where essentially I'm the president.
On Chicago's very own.
I love Chicago. I know Chicago.
720 WGN.
612, my friend Patty Vasquez is here. Well, she's all of our friends, not just my friend.
Aw, thank you.
What are you doing up?
I'm on my way to Springfield, catching the 7 o'clock Amtrak.
And what's going on in Springfield?
Well, you know, there's this thing. They're trying to cover all of our bills and stuff like that. But there's also a
this alleged threat of a budget.
Well, yes. But there's also a bill that's going to be read into the record today. House Bill 40, which is to protect women's right to choose and their control over their own reproductive systems. That kind of systems. It makes it sound also
some
very
sort of
technical.
Block against a potential Supreme Court change down the road.
I believe that Roe v. Wade's going to be overturned, and this is if that happens, there is trigger legislation in the state of Illinois that would not only ban abortions but also certain forms of contraception, including IUDs and birth control pills.
What about just women turning you down? Because that's one of the more effective forms
very
of conception.
Powerful.
That's so, actually 100%, I think.
Mm-hmm. So, right? Yeah. So there's a lot more at stake than what people think.
But that's great. I don't think a lot of people know about the trigger law, so that's good.
And all of that has to be adjudicated.
Yes, all that has to be adjudicated.
It's a fancy word.
I'm confused as to why this wasn't done in the last 45 years. There are different points in our state's history.
It's never been this bad. It's never been this scary.
But I mean, at the same time, you know, we got a little bit confident about our legal system and our rights.
No doubt about it.
Yes.
But the cockiness may have been warranted in the past. It's not anymore.
No.
So
a little preventative action.
So you go to Springfield a lot. Now, do the people of Springfield glad to see you? Are they afraid of you?
Some people are like, you're back?
Right.
And other people are glad that WGN's in the house, you know, in the Capitol. Making our presence known.
Should send Sandberg down with her at once.
Yeah, come on down.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
You know, Sandberg and Patty in Springfield.
Yeah, that might kind of scare him into, you know, signing a bill.
Into doing stuff.
And
we'll sit in the press box, we'll just stare at everybody.
Sandberg.
Do it!
Sandberg coming out, Madigan takes the week off. How is Mike? Has he asked about me?
He has not, although it's always strange when he's on the floor of the House of Representatives. There's almost like an absence of sound. Mm-hmm. Not quiet. It's like the absence of the possibility of sound in the room. Mm-hmm. It's very strange.
Tell him I said hi.
I will. I'll wave. You know what we should do? I should bring this pinata with me. Can I get a Steve Cochran pinata? Oh.
This Trump pinata?
Yes.
Yeah, if you're watching on the video stream now, you can see it. I don't know where this came from. Do we know where this came from, Chick?
It was sitting down on the floor, so I put it in your chair. He's like wearing a little beanie cap. That's his hair.
Yeah,
oh, it's a Make America Great Again hat.
I thought that was his hat.
You thought it was a blow-up doll?
It's a pinata.
From here it looked like a blow-up doll.
Why is everything either sex or a snack with you?
Or a sexy snack.
Will there be food inside of this? Can we hit?
Yeah, if you hit it, will there be candy? I don't think so. What are you guys doing next week?
Oh, we have an event at the Rouse Center.
We do. Women in Broadcasting and Comedy.
Yeah.
So very excited.
What does that mean?
We're gonna have a talk.
You're going to talk about women in
Broadcasting
and Comedy?
We're going to have a talk. Yeah. Andrea and I are going to have... We need to talk to everybody.
Definitely, because you two don't talk enough.
We never see each other, so we actually have to schedule an event on stage so we can talk to the crowd.
Well, what's the deal? People come in and see you talk about women in comedy and broadcasting?
Yeah, we'll just talk about our careers.
That's the title.
There's a segment we interview each other. We're going to do a Q&A, so it's going to be a great event.
Good.
This is their Artful Women series, which they've started about a year ago.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a really successful program. So,
and it's midday, so it's perfect for both of us.
That's right.
It's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Which is, you've been up for an hour at that point.
At that point, yeah. I'll be traveling back from St. Louis, actually, that day.
I hope I make it.
Oh, yeah, you better.
We're traffic. We'll take a break, do the top six. Before we go, though, man, we'll get into this a little bit later. There's a new survey out that said bald guys are sexier and more confident than guys with hair. Any arguments with that?
Well, we all knew that.
What? Can you rephrase the question?
Bald guys sexier, more confident.
There you go. Yes.
Yeah, that's right answer.
I have a little problem
with that. You don't think you're as sexy as I am? Is that your problem with that?
No, of course not, Steve.
You're both sexy in your own ways.
Yes.
I just look for any good news in any form of any kind lately, and that was the best news of yesterday. So
we all knew that,
and it came from a recognized scientific journal, Men's Health Magazine.
Brian Urlacher's gonna be so sad today, then.
Yeah, Urlacher's on today because he's, what's the deal? His hair is suing someone? He's suing his hair?
Yes, all of his hair. Every follicle.
He's suing his hair.
It's a company in Florida that's trying to make money off of the success he's had here with the company.
And they're using his picture?
Yes.
You can't do that.
Mm-mm, no.
He does look like a little chia. I kind of like the hair. No, I do. I'll tell him. I love his.
Urlacher.
I do like his little.
That's the only time he's ever been described as a little chia.
A cute little chia.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would phrase it that way.
And I wouldn't say it to his face either.
Oh, he's a big teddy
bear. But
you can
say it to his hair.
I'll say it to his hair.
If you're bald, sexy, and confident, you can say it to him.
That's right.
We'll take a break. Come back to the top six at six. Patty is on every night starting at 11. You want to throw out your social media situation?
You can find me on Twitter at Patty Vasquez, C-H-I. Chai.
It's chai. Patty Vasquez chai.
Chai. Yeah, I don't like that. I should change that.
Okay, well, don't do it yet because you just gave it out.
And Patty Vasquez on Facebook.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Have a safe trip. Say hi to Madigan. Oh, we covered that.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
The top six at six on 720 WGN.
Every morning in this hour, we give you six things you know you're going to be talking about later today and try to give you a little bit of knowledge on each one of them. Like... Item number one, the president called out Chicago for violence again and then threw in a ridiculous statistic, which is not true and proven to be not true. He brought it from his campaign, continues to cite it, says the murder rate in the country is up 45%. No, it's not. It's not up 45% here. It's not up 45% anywhere. This would be, I guess, fake news. Coming from the president. But nonetheless, he called out Chicago again when he was sitting with a bunch of sheriffs from around the country. And he looked at the sheriffs and said, bet you guys could fix it. Now, I keep falling back to it. Remember, Trump said he'd fix it in a week. You know, the Air Force One could get him here, say Monday. By next Friday, there wouldn't be any more murders.
Be great. I'm very open to that.
Well, I hope he comes in. Let's do this. Travel ban got another day in court yesterday. Crazy numbers on this. Speaking of Trump, and, you know, he loves the ratings. It's an estimate, first estimate, that 30 million people listened to the audio of last night's court event, which really was a pretty stiff recitation of the travel ban, its merits on both sides, and whether or not the temporary stay should continue. I mean, it goes to show you two things, I think. One, that people want to avoid their families, and two, that people have never had a more heightened sense of politics and an interest in politics and an interest in this particular administration.
It's good, though, that people were listening to the
Absolutely.
Legal process, which
no
is kind of cool.
Garen Conti will be on here in a little bit to talk about it. Senator Al Franken. Somebody let him out of the box, man. Senator Al Franken called Betsy DeVos the newly minted. And did she get sworn in last night? I think she did.
Mm-hmm.
Betsy DeVos, the new Secretary of Education. He called her the most incompetent cabinet nominee in American history. Mm-hmm. Hey, Betsy, welcome. I think we're going to have a lot of fun together. She did not hold up real well in the cross-examination, which is what it came down to, and the questioning. I think the characterization is pretty unfair generally because it's not like Al Franken knows her. He spent a little time with her. The big harm here is the anti-DeVos advocates see it, and, you know, they've got an argument to make, is that she has never had her kids in public school, she has no experience in the public school system, and that she is such a strong advocate for charter schools that is a controversial topic to begin with, that the poorest kids will be locked out of this, which is the constant argument about charter schools. Will play this out and we'll see what sort of work she can get done. But so far, the Democrats not so happy. This is the one they stayed up all night to try to block, but they couldn't get one more Republican to come her way.
25 hours.
What was it, 25?
25 hours that they had.
That's even more than all night.
It was not considered a filibuster, just like basically an all night talkathon.
Yeah. Ah, there's nothing better than hearing politicians talk all night. It's tremendous. Here's an exciting statistic. One third of Americans don't know that Obamacare and the ACA are the same thing. I know the insurance game is complicated. It certainly is for me. It is for everybody. You know, every November you got to figure out, are you going to keep your benefits? You're not going to keep your benefits. You go through whatever your questionnaires are to try to fine tune the whole process. But the Affordable Care Act, the ACA, and Obamacare are the same thing. Obamacare is a nickname for the Affordable Care Act. Is this the end of the world? No. It just goes to show that people need to be more educated.
Well, just pay attention, yeah.
Yeah, right. Because you need to know what you're involved with and what you're against. You know, because it would be embarrassing if you stood up and you said, listen, I don't like Obamacare, but that ACA thing is even worse.
I think they made a bit on that on Saturday Night Live, too.
Did they?
Yeah.
Well, if they haven't, they should. And speaking of that, Saturday Night Live is considering a Thursday night primetime weekend update spinoff for this fall. I'd be more excited about this if the anchors were different. Michael Che has been in here. He's a nice guy. And who's the white guy?
Colin Jost.
Colin Jost.
Yeah.
They're just weak.
Yeah, I agree.
They're both weak. I think those two are the weakest part of the show.
Could you ask Seth Meyers to work a sixth day?
Seth Meyers should do the show. He was good.
Yeah. What if they had Seth Meyers and Tina Fey come back and do the midday update?
Well, they could. They could do like celebrity walk-ons, I suppose. Actually, though, the worst thing about and John DeCosta is here. John, you know, you and I have had this discussion. Drives me nuts. When a bit is over, it needs to just end. You don't announce that the bit's over. And every time there's a character on, and Seth Meyers was awful at this too. Joke, 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 joke. John DeCosta, everybody.
Yes.
John DeCosta.
Yes.
No, it just needs to end.
Yeah, I totally agree.
But even back in the alleged golden era of Saturday Night Live, that was a problem. They never knew how to end a sketch.
See, yeah, this is good insight. I never knew that that's not.
Yeah, if you go back and look, and you're absolutely right. If you go back and look at those, it's like they're funny. But there's no closer.
No.
There's not, and it just, and then it's this awkward, okay, I guess they're done, and they clap.
Yeah. Applaud here, because we're done.
Yeah.
And finally, there's one other New England Patriots player who has joined the boycott of visiting the White House and shaking hands with the new president. Devin McCourty. Is he a defensive back, Dave? Devin McCourty, is he a defensive back of the Patriots?
Yes.
He is?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Devin McCourty is joining Martellus Bennett and skipping the White House visit. I don't even know if that's scheduled yet, is it?
It has not been scheduled, no. Okay. Bennett was the first one to say it.
I think they're doing it right after the memorial for the Bowling Green Massacre.
Oh, right. Yeah, did you see, by the way, Kellyanne Conway apologized?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we do need to let her off the hook. Eventually.
Uh-huh.
It's 6:28. Let's take a break. Come back. Get the big story coming up on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
The state has met its burden of demonstrating that it faces immediate and irreparable injury as a result of the signing and implementation of the executive order.
It's a temporary ban.
I think you have one judge. The law is very clear that the president has broad powers to keep this country safe and to limit access to people that could come into this country and do us harm. It's somewhat sad to see a judge go rogue like this.
Ideally, you won't have a ban very long. I mean, we just have to find out what's happening.
Karen Conti joins us now, and Karen Conti is from the law firm Karen Conti, Conti and Karen, KarenConti.com. What is your law firm again? Hold on, Karen. Let me try it with your microphone, actually. Go ahead.
Good morning, Steve.
Hi. What is the law firm's name again?
The law firm's name is Conti Law. Very simple.
Okay. And the website?
It is kconti at kcontilaw.com. That's my email, but kconti law is the website.
Right. And phone number?
312-332-7800.
And happy one-year anniversary. Remember, it's Karen's first anniversary.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
Thank
great.
Thank you very much.
Not
Thank
in law for her own firm.
No, she's done the law thing a little longer than that. All right, now this hearing that allegedly 30 million people listened to last night told me there's no interest in politics or this president. This hearing is fairly complex legal stuff about an issue that would be I don't want to say routine, but kind of routine, if not for the circumstances. So is there a way to break this down for somebody simple like me?
Yeah. Well, you know, basically, when the ban was there was an injunction on the ban that happened in Washington, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that goes up to the Ninth Circuit, which is a federal court of appeals. So they oversee that court, and they get a chance to argue that this injunction, meaning the stoppage of the ban, was wrongful. Okay, so if the Ninth Circuit, which we heard yesterday, rules that the ban stays enjoined, meaning that the ban is stayed, then it goes back to the court in Washington. And the Washington court now will have to spend a couple of weeks and determine whether or not on a long-term basis the ban will stay in effect or not. So it's we're in the middle of a procedural kind of a nightmare, because the Ninth Circuit has a number of things it can do. It can send it back. It can reject it. It can overturn it. This can go up to the U.S. Supreme Court. There could be a request that the Ninth Circuit hear it again with more judges, called en banc. But the bottom line is, you know, after all of this is sifted through, the key is, did Donald Trump have the authority to do what he did, and or did it violate the Constitution? And you heard some of those arguments yesterday, but you also heard a lot of procedural arguments on whether or not this was the appropriate method to hear the case. So it's confusing to hear it from the average person, because you don't know what's going on. You hear these judges using kind of a harsh tone with some of the lawyers,
yeah,
but you don't know why. And don't make much of that, because some of these judges are playing devil's advocate, and they're trying to argue their point against, you know, maybe their point is in favor of the ban, but they're arguing against it because they want the lawyer to come up with a good argument in response. So given those arguments, we really don't know what's going to happen until they issue their ruling.
So, Karen, if they uphold the ban and it goes back in place and another state or another body sues, is that a whole new case, or will they look at this now as the precedent?
No, that's a whole new case, but the courts will tend to look at other precedent. That is one of the things that our law is based on. So it could very well be that we have different states ruling in different ways on this very ban, which means that when there is a dispute as to states, usually the United States Supreme Court will then be tasked with deciding that.
Doesn't the court have to be careful, too, about legislating what the president can and can't do for future, speaking of precedent, going forward? I mean, I don't like the way this ban rolled out. I don't like the effect of it. A lot of people were hurt by it out of the gate. It was ham-handed and lopsided and dopey. Having said that, for future presidents and for this president going forward, the president does have to have discretion to be able to protect the country without having to deal with courts all the time. So I would think the courts would be really careful about how they rule on something like this, or am I overreading it?
Oh, no, absolutely. And the president has broad discretion when it comes to aliens, when it comes to national security, when it comes to foreign policy and immigration decisions, broad, broad authority. And rarely does the United States Supreme Court ever strike down any immigration policy that a president makes. So given that this ban, this injunction was very, very, very unusual. But on the other hand of that, so we have all this great discretion that, you're right, it's an executive branch decision. It's not a legislative decision. Judges don't know national security, nor should they. But the president can't discriminate based upon religion, okay? And the problem for Trump is his own words, his own blah, blah, blah is probably going to be an issue for him, because he has gone on television and he has gone on record to say this is a Muslim ban. He's gone on record to say we're going to treat Christians differently. And so with all of those pieces of evidence to show discrimination, a court could say this has a discriminatory element and we can't uphold that under the Constitution. Whereas if he had just said, all right, these seven countries are problems to us, I determined that they're problems and potential threats, we're going to have a ban on those countries, and that was it, that's a different story. So again, getting the issue of discrimination heard, you have to show discriminatory intent. Usually it's not there. In Trump's case, he made no bones about the fact that he was discriminating against these people based upon their religion.
And he's got his buddy Rudy Giuliani saying, when he first came to him, he said, we want to do a Muslim ban. How do we do it? So that doesn't help
exactly
either.
Exactly right. Yeah. And there are words. There's a whole website devoted to what Trump has said about this. And one of the things that Trump did say was, hey, we'll just call it a territorial ban. So, which is exactly what he did. Again, it's sort of like in the workplace, you know, and you've seen this, where someone gets fired and she says it's because she's a female, and then the employer says it's because, oh no, it's because she's incompetent. Well, you know, when you have someone saying bad things about women all the time,
right,
and then the woman gets fired, then you can put two and two together and come up with a discriminatory intent. And that's kind of akin to what's going on here.
Karen, speaking of his words, when he tweeted about this, quote, so-called judge and saying if anything happens, blame him.
Oh, this is a good point. Now, hold that thought, though. Let's break for traffic, okay, because I do want to, Andrea brings up a really good point here, because we want to ask you about this. Judges are human beings. And if you continue to slam judges, what does that mean going forward, considering the fact that President Trump has, I believe, 50 new lawsuits since he took office 3 weeks ago, on top of the other legal stuff he still has to deal with from his life as a private citizen?
Please rise. Court is now in session.
Karen Conti's with us. All right, so the big picture here, with the president saying things like he said yesterday, this isn't the law, this is just common sense. Well, that's not true, right? It's the law.
It is the law. And, you know, the president can say whatever he wants, and you can say it's disrespectful, or you can say that calling someone a so-called judge is disrespectful. I don't like that. I don't like the head of our country saying things like that. But it doesn't do him any favors. You know what I'm saying? It's like I always say, you know, when your barber has a scissors in his hand, that's not the time to insult him, right? You don't want to make people angry. And judges are used to having people defer to them. You know, they sit up on the bench, they have a robe, whether that, you know, people show them respect. And that's the way we do it in this country.
Well, but even more so than the throne-like, egotistical sort of take on it, not that you're saying this, but some people certainly do, this is a civilized society. This is the foundation of our judicial system, that there's a respectful courtroom and an exchange of ideas and a fair trial, end quotes.
Well, and it's a slippery slope. If people really believe that what Donald Trump says, which is, hey, you guys come off of it, this is common sense. This is constitutional rights. These aren't loopholes. These aren't silly things. These are things that our country is based on.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe we haven't had to fight for them very often in our lifetimes, but in this situation, we have to respect those rights, and we have to understand our whole country was based on this. People came here so that they wouldn't be religiously persecuted. And so, again, there was a way to do this. Donald Trump could have done this really easily, and it probably would have failed right into law, and it probably would have taken effect with very little legitimate legal challenges. But to do it the way he did it obviously caused chaos, which was problematic. But, you know, it needed to be done in a way that was religious neutral. And it didn't, in my view, it wasn't done that way.
All right, last question. We got a 4-4 Supreme Court. If it goes to the Supreme Court and it stays tied, does it go back to the Washington judge's decision?
It stays the same. So if there's a tie, that means there's no overturning of what's happened on the lower court.
Of course, that's assuming the Supreme Court hears the case. But since it's an issue involving the president, you would assume they would, right?
Well, not necessarily. 5 judges have to agree to hear it. So there's no automatic goes to the Supreme Court. They have to decide to take it. And I think they're only going to take it if there are 2 states that disagree. If you've got one state saying the ban is good and one state saying the ban is bad, that would, I think, you know, make them take the case to decide it once and for all. But on this issue, I just don't think they're going to get involved in it until it reaches a different level.
Karen Conti trying to explain tough legal stuff to us because, you know, we're just pretty faces. And again, how do people get a hold of you?
You can call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
Pat Brady joins me. We're going to talk a little politics this morning, too. And in addition to that, CPS students went home with a letter, which is one of the most one-sided things you're ever going to see. From a public school system that's supposed to be apolitical. Oh, man, we'll get into that, too. Because, you know, we have to. It's not like we want to. We have to. 659, News Next, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees.
My friend Jordan Goodman will join us in just a second. First, good morning to you, Pat Brady.
Morning, sir. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
I am living the dream.
Pat, name your company.
Next Generation Strategies.
And you can know that, you know, I don't know if you know this, it's the official Next Generation Strategies of the Steve Cochran Show.
Thank you.
That's a title we don't hand out just to anybody. Show number 836 on Twitter at Cochran Show, Facebook.com, Steve Cochran Show. And 312-981-7200 for calls and text messages. Jordan Goodman is at moneyanswers.com and joins us now. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you.
And say hi to Pat Brady.
Hello, Pat.
Morning. How you doing?
Which next generation are you talking about?
The one that I won't be part of.
But it's a great name for a forward-thinking company. That's what we like to say.
Well, I hope somebody will reach that next generation, not you.
All right, so well, I'll take that as a compliment you meant it to be.
This is assuming we don't have a nuclear war between now and
Yeah, exactly. I tell people all the time, though, for people who are concerned about the security aspect of that, they're not going to give Trump the real codes. They're going to give him the Nerf suitcase. It's just going to be the fake one. So it's going to be just
Nancy
fine.
Nancy Pelosi gets the real codes. Is that the way it works?
No, that's even more frightening.
I think you're going to say Bannon gets the real codes.
No, now you're scaring the hell out of me.
Sorry.
All right, so Pat and I were talking, and Pat had a good point. He said, listen, let's talk a little Trump money here. Is the Trump effect on Wall Street going to continue? Everything that goes up must go down, or where are we?
I think it's going higher. I really do. I mean, we hit another record high yesterday in various of the indices, and we haven't even done anything yet. I mean, this is all anticipation of what could be happening. I mean, things are taking a little bit longer than they thought, and it's not going to be all instant the way people said. They haven't come out with a tax plan yet, but I think they will within the next 30 days or so. When you cut corporate taxes, they're talking about, when you cut individual taxes, you put money in people's pockets, and they're either going to spend it or invest it or hire or do things with it. So that's very positive. I think the infrastructure, I don't know how much it's going to be. Some people talk about $500 billion, some people talk about $1 trillion, but that's a direct stimulus to the economy. And so the kind of stimulus stocks, I guess you might say, would do very well in this environment. Asphalt and construction companies, all those kind of things are going to do well. And repatriating the money from overseas, there's about $2.5 trillion overseas right now. And even if you brought back half of that to invest in the U.S. economy, that would be good. And maybe the companies are going to just raise dividends or buy back stock, but whatever it is, it's going to be positive for them. And then deregulation. I mean, you may like it, you may not like it, but it's good for business. And a lot of consumers are not going to be protected as they have been in the past in all kinds of ways, but it's going to be good for business. So that's why the stock market's gone up so much. That's why interest rates have gone up so much, and I think it's going to continue. I'm on the record right now, Steve, for saying the Dow, which is now a little over 20,000, will end this year at 23,000.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow, because Election Day, I was so nervous I pulled all my money out of stocks.
Yeah, Pat went straight cash on Election Day.
That didn't work out too well, Pat, right?
Nah, it didn't. I got it good last time, not this time. Okay, all those things are great, and the things that they've talked about, they probably can get done. But what bothers me, maybe as a conservative Republican, we have $9 trillion in new debt. What are we going to do about that?
Well, I mean, it's as always, it's a percentage of GDP. And if the GDP grows at 3%, maybe 4%, then the debt goes down. Okay, that's the way to get out of debt is not
you grow out of it. You don't tax out of it, right?
You don't tax your way out of it. You grow your way out of it. Now, I wouldn't say out of it. We're never going to pay off the $19 trillion, okay? But if the percentage of debt to the GDP gets smaller, then you know it's manageable. It's manageable. That's the way. That's the only way out, really. You just can't, you know, tax yourself or regulate yourself into prosperity. And so I would think you would agree with that if you're a conservative Republican. I think you'd agree with that.
Yeah, I wish you could talk to our legislature and have them understand that here in Illinois.
Do they still have a budget there? Or are they still kind of hanging out?
No, we don't have a budget. No, listen, budgets are optional in Illinois. Maybe we'll get to it.
And also paying bills apparently is optional. Too.
Well, no, we pay the bills. We just do it in our time. You know what we like to do? In Illinois, we get all the bills that come in, and we leave the unopened envelopes there, and eventually we get to them.
Oh, good.
So.
Good, yeah. But I mean, I think what's happening in Illinois is a good example where you have paralysis in government, higher taxes, you drive people out of the state, and they're going to Wisconsin and other places where they're more business friendly. You know, people have a choice of where they invest, and not only domestically, but internationally. And that's why the dollar has been quite strong, because we are seen as a political, even though things are kind of crazy in Washington these days, we're seen as politically more stable than a lot of other places. I think that one of the big stories this year, Steve, is going to be in Europe are the three big elections, the Dutch in March, the French in April, and the Germans, I think it's in September. And we'll see, but I think all three of them could go to the far right-wing party.
The national, I mean, there's been a big movement there for the last 3 years, hasn't there?
Yeah,
all over
part of Brexit. In France, it's called the National Front Party. Marine Le Pen is the one there. And she is anti-Europe. She has said part of her platform is she would have a referendum on whether France should stay in the European Union. That would be called Frexit, now, since we've done Brexit now. And that could be the end of the European Union if France pulls out.
Well, to be honest, that's the only hope for Europe going forward is if the European Union goes away completely, because some fragile, constant need of bailout European Union would actually put a greater strain on the world economy.
Yeah.
If it's every man for himself and back to taking care of yourself, then it's a different game.
But the places like Greece are going to fall away. I mean, they're being supported by the Germans who don't like it, but they'll have no savior left. And in general, the southern tier, Italy is in really bad shape. Spain, they have like 25% unemployment. I mean, this is why are there economy?
Does nobody in Europe get the History Channel? Yeah. I mean, at some point, I mean, spend 10 minutes watching that. You'd figure it out.
Why are their economies historically, like the last decade or so, been so bad? I mean, Italy's bad. What's the cause?
It's a lack of flexibility in the labor markets and the tax market. I was actually on a plane recently with a guy who's a French guy in a French company. And I said, why don't you hire more people? And he put it very simply. I thought this was fascinating. He said, if I pay somebody $75, I have to pay $200 in their salary. And as you pay double their salary in taxes, and you have to pay for what's called the social benefit, another 25 cents in effect. So to pay somebody $75, you have to come up with $200. That's a real disincentive to hire somebody.
Sure right? is.
What about?
So I didn't realize the taxes were that high. I mean, in return for that, you get health care. But the taxes are so high, it's a tremendous disincentive to hire
well,
and them. And you can't fire them either.
Anybody that's tried to use the healthcare systems in the UK or France would tell you it ain't that great.
Yeah.
When you're standing in line for 3 years waiting for a hip transplant and other things are going.
That's
Pat,
right.
Hold that thought till we do traffic. We'll come back. More with Jordan Goodman in a second. More, MoneyAnswers.com. I don't know if you know this, Andre and Dave, has everything you need to know about money. It's all laid out right there from the books Jordan has written to the seminars and the schedule and the live speaking engagements he has, but most importantly, the resources. He's got the resources there that you can hit, and he'll tell you how to invest money, how to save money. He has kept me from financial ruin over and over again. He's actually got one link on there called Steve's an Idiot, Don't Do This. And if you click on that, you'll see some of the things he's taught me not to do.
You're listening to The Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio in downtown Chicago on 720 WGN.
I'm out next couple of days. Pete McMurray will be here. We'll have all the, you know, regular good times for Thursday and Friday with Pete. But if you feel, Andre, at any time, and Dave, chime in on this as well, that Pete's not getting it done, throw him out.
Okay.
Throw him out.
Throw him out.
Physically throw him out.
Physically throw him out.
He's a tough guy.
He'll go kicking and screaming.
Pete's
he won't
tough.
Go easy. Yeah. Well, if
you met Pete?
Well, yeah, he'll be taking selfies on the way out.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Actually, someone just hold a bright light outside. He'll think it's a camera. He'll run into traffic. No, we love Pete. I love Pete.
Yeah,
Pete's great.
I love Pete.
He always wears some wild clothes, too.
You don't think he's trying to get noticed, do you? Mm.
Not at all.
It's one
especially
of the
between
9
and 10 on CLTV.
And we'll be on CLTV this morning, as we are every morning between 9 and 10. Thanks for the reminder there. Jordan Goodman rejoins us now, and MoneyAnswers.com is his website. Pat, you were making a point before the break. What else did you want to ask, Jordan?
Big issue in the campaign was wage growth. With the market going nuts like that and these potential reforms, is that going to have any effect?
It is. I mean, wages have been up. The last year it was up about 2.5%. If companies have more earnings, in fact, right now there's a shortage of workers, and that means that they have to compete for workers. The Federal Reserve puts out something called the JOLTS report, which is the Job Openings Long-Term Report.
Yeah, we know.
Reading it.
Yeah, 5.5 million jobs.
Very sexy.
It is very sexy. Jolting, I would say, yes. Mm-hmm. But 5.5 million jobs are open. They cannot find the people to meet the criteria for them.
They still have the skill gap, though?
Huge. Huge skill gap. In other words, they want to hire these people. And a lot of this is in the industrial Midwest. You can't find tool and die people or plumbers or, you know, kind of old line people. They're retiring and younger people aren't going into those.
So I don't
know if community colleges aren't doing it or what, but they're just a huge gap there. So for the people who have those skills, wages are going up indeed.
Why aren't trade schools exploding? And is it a relation to the fact that all of our parents my generation, we all treat our children like the special snowflakes that they are, so we wouldn't expose them to something like a trade school?
That's correct. That's not happening. It's not sexy to do that. You know, I want to go make new apps or something or algorithms, but not get my hands dirty. I mean, trade schools are busy. There are a lot of them, but there's not enough. Remember, all these baby boomers are retiring now in those jobs. And you've had the scandal in the private trade schools, you know, University of Phoenix and a lot of these places went under because they weren't apparently training people well enough and they were making all kinds of promises that weren't being delivered.
Right.
But I'm just saying that you talk about wages going up. The reason wages go up is employers have to compete for workers And that is happening now in many, many different areas. Construction. You try hiring people to do construction. It's really difficult these days. And ironically, the only place we can get these people is from Mexico and Central America, because they're the ones who are willing to work out in the middle of the sun all day and, you know, do roofing or something.
Well, it seems like the wall wouldn't help then.
Might not.
All right. So since everything financial is not in real time, you've got to make your bets financially based on where you think the economy is going. This has got to be largely based on pulling regulations back, right? This is what all this optimism is?
Absolutely. I mean, in every area. Now, just in the last week or so, President Trump signed a order basically repealing the fiduciary rule, which is that's why the financial stocks took off. That was a rule that was about to go into effect in April, which said that financial companies have to work in the interest of their clients before themselves. Sounds obvious. But the result of it was like 1,000 pages of regulation, which meant that financial advisors didn't want to deal with anybody with under like $1 million. So that's why the financial stocks took off like that. I think interest rates are going to be rising and inflation is going to be rising because of all these policies, which is not necessarily a bad thing. We've had deflation in many cases for quite a while. But that means that where you want to be putting your money in the fixed income vehicles is different than the past. We've had a 30-year bull market in bonds, which basically stopped last summer. And interest rates have been rising, and I think will rise further. The 10-year Treasury is now about 2.4. It had been about 1.4 before the election. I think that's going to go over 3%. So that means if you have money in bonds, or what I call bond surrogates, things like utilities, real estate investment trusts, those are going to get hurt even further than they already have.
The extremes are almost never true, and the Democrat panic about all rich people are bad as a generalization has created a large bit of the regulation. Having said that, you take President Trump and surround him with a bunch of billionaires. That's not exactly a no regulation zone. Somebody's got to watch these guys.
How about who's going to be SEC director? To me, that's going to be a very important.
Well, not just the SEC. I mean, just in general. How do we get to 2007? Well, let's take a bunch of people who are doing well, which is good. I who supports people doing well more than me? It's a great thing. But you have
got out of hand.
Yeah, greed is not good.
But we'll see. I mean, I don't think the financial industry wants to go through what it went through before. So I think they're going to be very careful. I mean, the banks are still super tight. They're talking about rolling back Dodd-Frank regulations to some extent, which might help. But we're not going back to the days where, you know, somebody who can just fog a mirror can get a $700,000 mortgage, as was happening in 2006, 2007. So I think there's still a conservative nature in banking. That's one of the reasons I've mentioned before on your show, these bridge loans, those are happening because people can't get loans from traditional banks.
What's the website for that again?
Well, they're called Commercial Real Estate Income Funds, and the website is commercialrealestateincomefunds.com. You get an 8% yield, no market fluctuation whatsoever, and it's a whole portfolio of these bridge loans where they're doing over 1 year to renovate or improve commercial properties, and at the end of the time when the property is completed, they sell it, and you get a piece of the profits. So you get 8%. Plus another 1% or 2% profit sharing on top of that. There's a phone number for them as well, 888-444-2102. That's been very popular with the listeners in the past. A lot of people are getting 8%.
Who's regulating that, though?
It goes through the SEC. It's considered a private placement.
Okay.
There's what's called a Reg A Plus fund, which came out of the Jobs Act. The Jobs Act was passed in 2012, and now allows the average individual to get into things which in the past only, you know, multimillionaire types.
Right, but you have to be able to sing a Bob Marley song, which is why it's called a Reggae Plus
fund. Exactly.
So a lot of people don't know that part of it. And the other reason you can tell it's a legitimate deal is it's a terrible website name, commercialrealestateincomefunds.com. You'll misspell
it. It's descriptive but long.
Yeah, you'll misspell it 12 times, but when you hit it, man, it's going to be good, because who's paying 8%? Nobody. Come
Correct.
On.
And with no market fluctuation. I just said you're going to lose money in bonds and bond surrogates as rates rise. Here there's no market fluctuation. Minimum hold time, 18 months, and then you can get your money back if you like or keep it in. You can take regular checks or you can reinvest them, whatever you like. No
Making money sexy. It's my friend Jordan Goodman, moneyanswers.com, for your resource for all things related to it. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Thank you. And thank you, Pat.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
743, and Pat Brady's here, and Eric Herman has joined us. Eric, where do you work?
I work at Kivett.
And what does that mean? What do you do?
You know, I always get asked that by my friends and family, and I have a hard time explaining it. No, we are a strategic communications firm based here in the great city of Chicago, and it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Always like having you in. Do you help mostly Democrats?
Well, actually, most of our clients are businesses or nonprofits.
Okay.
We have been known occasionally to dabble on the Democratic side, okay. And that's certainly our lead.
I just want people to know we're trying to get both perspectives in here.
I am a Democrat.
He helped me out once, though. Yeah. I'm a Republican.
Oh, no, he's a fair-minded fella. You?
No. I'm a partisan hack.
Yeah, not so much.
Yeah.
No, Pat's a great guy and a pleasure to work with.
Thank you.
Ben Bradley over at Channel 9, I think, was first to break this story yesterday. CPS kids went home yesterday with a letter from school, and it didn't say, Timmy's doing really well. The 381,000 CPS students went home with a letter that stated and starts, Governor Bruce Rauner, just like President Trump, has decided to attack those who need the most help. Twice in the letter, it accuses Governor Rauner of cheating children. That's a direct word. Once it says Governor stole from the kids. The letter goes on to cite Forrest Claypool, the Chicago Public Schools CEO, often repeated claim from Forrest Claypool that the governor broke a promise by blocking Chicago receiving $250 million from city schools. It does not touch on in any way, shape, or form the fact that Democrats have controlled the city and the schools for decades, and Rauner's been around for 2 years. That brings us to Beth Purvis. Beth Purvis, the Illinois Secretary of Education. Dr. Beth Purvis joins us now on the phone. Look, there's two arguments here, and welcome to the show. Can I call you Beth?
Yes, please.
Welcome to the show, Beth. There's two arguments here, or two storylines, maybe. One is, should CPS schools get involved in politics to this level, which I obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, I don't think they should. I think it's ridiculous to send home a letter to the entire parents or student body and parents and assume that everybody's going to sign up for this. It's or be on board with this idea. Secondarily, they do have to take responsibility for the Democrat side of this. So what's going on here, and why did Forrest Claypool and company think this was a good idea?
Well, as you saw in the response that I had yesterday, mm-hmm. I just think we want parents to understand that now is not the time to be divisive. Right now, you know, last week the governor's Illinois School Funding Commission came together, and this bipartisan bicameral group came forward with a framework that would create a more adequate and equitable funding formula for all children in Illinois, and will especially help those districts who serve a high percentage of low-income kids. And I think we've all heard that there are bipartisan groups working on legislation that will both address the school funding issue but also the other crises that we have here. So I think now is the time for us to be getting together to urge our General Assembly to work in a bipartisan, bicameral way.
Well, Doctor, as you know, and Eric and Pat jump in on this, I may be idealistic. I don't believe any Democrat or Republican leader gets up in the morning and goes, how do we screw the kids today? Well, what are we going to do today to really put it to the kids? It's a ridiculous notion. So if this is a personal battle between Forrest Claypool and the mayor and Governor Rauner in their eyes, there's ways to fight it without dragging in the entire student body and the parents.
Well, we would agree with that. Again, we really would hope that CPS would focus on, what's best for their students. The governor has been really clear that they'll help Chicago make its full normal pension payment if there's a compromise on statewide pension reform. So that's what we should all be working on, rather than, again, these divisive statements.
Yeah, and if you go forward on this, Eric, and I'll let you jump in here, but as you go forward on this, because if there isn't pension reform going forward, kids in schools are going to suffer at a measure we don't even begin to understand now. And you were about to say.
No, I was just going to say, hi, Beth.
Hi, Eric.
I have two kids in Chicago public schools, and it's, I, along with a lot of other parents, are just very worried about this situation. Let me ask you this. Why does this funding have to be tied to pension reform? It just feels like it's being held hostage to an unrelated or not entirely related issue.
Well, I think, first of all, it's very important to say that, in the last 2 years, under Governor Rauner, we have increased school funding by over $700 million. And even though CPS has declining enrollment, even though they have increasing property tax wealth, we have ensured that
you know, there is more money for all kids in the state. So the governor has been working incredibly hard on school funding reform. And yes, you are concerned as a Chicago Public School parent, and there are parents concerned across the entire state. But, you know, as Steve just said, we have some real pension problems, and the governor has agreed, again, to help Chicago make its full normal pension payment, but it has to be part of a comprehensive statewide pension reform. And the governor was elected to bring reforms to the state, and obviously that includes pension reform. And I think it's also important to say that CPS receives a block grant that gets it about $245 to $250 million in funding over and above what it would receive if it applied for reimbursement in certain categorical payments. And that money, you know, could be used to pay outstanding debt. So I think it's very important that we look at all the facts. And again, we use this moment to focus on the fact that we have bipartisan work to try to come to a new school funding formula, and we have bipartisan work to try to come to to solve some of our other issues. And this is a time that we should all be working together.
Beth, is the bankruptcy option still on the table for CPS? I know there's so much reckless borrowing, but it seems like a Band-Aid solution year after year after year. Is that still on the table?
Well, I think that's a question you would have to ask the CPS board. I think the CPS board needs to think about some real structural changes to what is occurring in the district. And again, you know, we believe that the new school funding, you know, the framework that was put forward by the school funding formula will help address some of the problems with our statewide school funding formula. And we also believe that if there's a pension, you know, if there is pension reform, that'll help all kids in the state.
Hey, Beth, this is Pat Brady. On the pension issue, say they declare bankruptcy, does that extinguish then the liability for pensions? Or is that the only way to get true reform, given what the Supreme Court or the Constitution says?
I apologize, Pat. I am not the person to answer that question.
Yeah, I'm probably not the one to ask it either, but
it's a good question, though. Hey.
Well, one of the other things I've heard, too, and this goes to the larger notion, and this is common sense, President Trump, this overarching theory that somehow the governor is out to hurt kids and only the Democrats can protect kids is an outrageous notion. And it should offend anyone who has anything remotely other than, you know, far left beliefs. So I think that's insulting to people. But I've heard people say since yesterday that this is some way for the governor to blackmail the city into giving up control of the schools so the state would then have control. How does that make sense in anybody's mind? This just pushes that in the other direction. In other words, people are looking to fight and pick a fight for their agendas.
If I can just respond, you know, that is just ridiculous. You know, Governor Rauner and his wife have spent the last 20-some-odd years dedicated to supporting the needs of children and families. They've given countless dollars and countless hours to early childhood programs, to public schools, to charter schools, public charter schools. I mean, they even worked as part of a group that put bonuses on the table for Chicago public school principals who are doing an outstanding job. So I think it's important that we recognize that this, you know, as you started with, there's that our public officials want what's best for students, and that the governor didn't start this attack here. There was an attack in a letter that went back yesterday, and our response was to say, let's look at the facts and let's work together to solve the problem.
Yeah, and Dr. Beth Purvis in the response says, again, it's a robust bipartisan and bicameral process. In other words, everybody's got to work together for the greater good of these kids, or nobody's going to be helped. Do we have Madigan commenting on this? Oh, I'm sorry. He's not available. Dr. Purvis, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Have a good day. Let's do a quick traffic and come back. And then, Eric, I want to bring up the fact that Mitch McConnell's an idiot. I think you'll enjoy that part of the show. Stand by for that at 720 WGN. Eric Herman's here. Pat Brady's here. So, Eric, I am not a big Mitch McConnell fan. I don't know if you could tell from the tease.
So I could understand.
But Elizabeth Warren, a woman, is standing up in the Senate speaking on behalf of her viewpoint that she thinks Jeff Sessions is a terrible idea for Attorney General. She then reads from a letter written by Coretta Scott King, the wife of Martin Luther King. And Mitch McConnell decides it's over the line, kicks her out of the Senate, using an arcane rule that nobody even knew about. Then she holds a press conference in the lobby. So a story that didn't have to be a story becomes huge. Are the Republicans trying to hand it to the Democrats at this point?
It's the whole thing seems to be breaking down. I mean, remember when the Senate was called the world's greatest deliberative body?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Those days seem a long, long way off. It's really incredible what's happening, the way civility is just completely collapsing.
But it's almost like, Pat, you know, Mitch McConnell didn't get word that a couple of weeks ago there were about every woman in America in Washington, and they were all angry. Why would you restart that fire?
I don't know, from a political standpoint. I agree with it. As a Republican, I wish he would have gone a long time ago. I'd like to see some younger faces and people that haven't been around forever. And that's just an unforced error, I think, with the Supreme Court picks. Now look what it's going to come back to haunt us now with our Supreme Court pick. The Democrats are still mad about what happened last time because the charge he led, and so it doesn't work.
Yeah, but I would say it would do the Democrats a favor, especially if Gorsuch does prove to be the nominee that he appears to be on paper, to take the high road here and then pat yourselves on the back all the way to the voting booth that we did the right thing while they didn't.
You know what? I think the warrant, I think it was condescending, and I think it was completely disrespectful.
See? Angry woman right there.
Go.
That's what happened.
There you go. But you know what? But citing something else, in reading more, Ted Cruz did the same thing in 2015, and McConnell didn't toss him out.
Hey, you know what? Last night, though,
the optics
CNN,
of it are not good.
They're terrible. Right. Last night, CNN had a debate with Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz on Obamacare. And you know what? It was fun to watch. Interesting.
Yes.
Respectful. Learned a lot. And maybe we need a little more of that.
Yeah.
And I'm not a kind of chocolate fan by any means.
I remember in the 80s.
Ted Cruz, by the way.
Right.
I remember in the 80s, Timothy Leary and Gordon Liddy would go around to college campuses and debate each other for entertainment. Yeah. Maybe these guys, Sanders
now,
and
you're
Cruz
showing your age, young
like
man. Who is that? Timothy Leary? Who?
Yeah. The Democrats need to find a candidate fairly quickly because President Trump may not be the strongest guy in 2020. Who's going to lead the party?
Yeah, that's a great question, Steve. I mean, I don't think the Democrats have a deep presidential bench right now.
Right.
So it's really going to be interesting. There's sort of a generational change going on. I personally have my eye on Kamala Harris, young senator from California.
Junior senator, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, there's some names knocking around, but it's hard to say. I think the real question is, where does the Democratic Party go right now? Because as we were talking about during the break, you've got a couple of different forces in the party that could pull it apart. And Chuck Schumer is in the unenviable position of trying to hold that together right now.
Yeah, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell need to leave today. I'm telling you, there needs to be some youthful leadership that's had a decent bowel movement recently and isn't quite so angry.
That was Cochran, by the way. That wasn't me.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you.
So I'm just so sick of both parties. I'm sick of both of them.
I just woke up. Thanks.
So, more fiber, the key to better politics.
That's what Mitch McConnell needs is more fiber.
You're kidding.
Careful, he might ban you from speaking.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, using another rule in the Senate I didn't know. They had a rule in the Senate that could remove me from the show. Nice to see you, Eric. You're always welcome here.
Hey, it's great.
I wish
we
had more time today because I could find other people that you would enjoy me mocking. And then
I could just sit here and listen to you mock
people. Well, feel free then.
All morning.
And Pat, again, where do you work?
Next Generation Strategies, on my way to Springfield to advocate for my clients. Should be interesting.
Well, again, Pat goes to Springfield. Yeah, Pat goes to Springfield, so Eric and I don't have to.
Exactly.
Yeah. Back with your news next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I'm proud to introduce the new Brian Urlacher.
My whole career, I was pretty much bald, so people just got to know me as being a bald guy. I did wonder what it would be like if I could have hair. Just didn't think it was an option for me at the time. Once I got my consultation at Restore, the decision was easy. They just take one hair out at a time and then put it wherever you feel like you need it. It really wasn't that big of a deal procedure-wise. I get different reactions every day. People can't believe that it's my hair. Just an amazing experience for me. I owe it all to Restore.
Look, we know it works. The question is, this many months down the road, how's Urlacher doing? Is he happy? What's his comb and brush budget gone up to? One of the all-time greats from the National Football League and your Chicago Bears, Brian Urlacher. What are you spending on brushes and combs now?
Those are valid questions, you know. The big thing is I have to have a travel brush now. I know I never had to worry about that before. Shampoo, travel conditioner. I used to go to Target and just buy soap. You know, that was it.
Yeah.
Now, shampoo, conditioner, It's gel, and I have to have a travel brush for my travel bag. So, you know, my cost, my budget's gone up for hair ads for sure.
Yeah, he's thinking about getting a second job. but here's the upside. You know, I shave mine to a one, and you know, there's nothing going on top anymore. That's an open real estate area.
Yeah.
But nobody ever recognizes when I get a haircut. People now tell you, "Well, hey dude, you got a haircut. You look great."
Dude, you need to get a haircut. With my lately, man, my hair it grows so. I mean, it's always growing fast where it did grow. now it goes fast everywhere because I got hair all over the place. But it's amazing. You know, what am I, like 2 years out now of my procedure, 2.5 years, something like that?
Is that how long it's been? Okay.
Yeah, well, I got it done before I went public with it a year ago in January. I got it done like a year before, I think, maybe just so I could make sure I had a full head of hair when I wanted everyone to know. So it's crazy. And I still, now when I see a picture of me bald, I'm like, ugh. You know, I'm not used to seeing the bald me. I'm used to seeing me with hair because I see me every day in the mirror. So I'm used to seeing me with hair.
But you played your whole NFL career without one helmet hair game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was great. I never had to worry about taking my helmet off, putting a hat on for my hair reasons. So I was lucky in that aspect.
Dave, I'd say hi to Urlacher.
Hey, Brian, good morning. So apparently there's a case in Florida where a doctor sort of tried to take credit for this procedure.
Well, let's cut to it, man. He's stealing money.
There's really only one company. There is not really. There is one company, and I'm sure you guys have seen the billboards, right, around Chicago, the Restore Hair. Yeah, that's the only place I've ever gone for my procedure. It's in Chicago, in Oak Brook, so I can't talk about the case, or I don't really know the juices of it, but someone tried to use me and say that I was a client of theirs, and I am not. I'm only a client of Restore there in Chicago. So anyone else who says that I am is lying. So we have a little situation going on down there, but the store is great. You know, you guys, the billboards are everywhere in Chicago. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, didn't Eddie go there? Eddie O?
Well, I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I said I think Eddie O went there. Eddie Olchek went there.
Oh, Eddie, man. Yeah, Eddie got it done. There's somebody else, too. Jason McKee got it done. And
right. And they're still using Dave Kaplan, for the before picture.
So, I saw Cap a few times this year when I was doing my football show with Comcast. He's definitely bald. Yeah.
Where'd you watch the Super Bowl?
On my couch here in Arizona.
And?
Well, it collapsed. You know, the Patriots are great. They won the game. But, man, you get third one, you throw it, you get sacked, and it's a fumble. And then you got first and 10 on the Patriots 22, up by 8, and you throw it again. I mean, if you go up by 11, there's a really good chance you win the football game. There's, 5 minutes left in the game?
Exactly.
You made that catch. If you get the first, or if you just kick a field goal there, you make it really hard for them. You make them have to get an onside kick and score a touchdown and get 2-point conversion. I know that everything they did was crazy up to that point, but if you just make them do those things, you probably win the football game.
Everything had to go right for the Patriots.
It was a perfect storm.
And everything had to go wrong for the Falcons.
Two-point conversions they had to get. They had to score twice.
Crazy. It's
unbelievable, the debacle. The Patriots won the game, but Atlanta just did everything they could do to not win.
And by the way, coming off that season and three quarters of a Super Bowl win, am I right about this, Dave? Two coaches got fired this morning?
Oh, well, their defensive coordinator and Brian Cox, who is their D-line coach, they're going to either reassign him or...
reassign.
They won't
reassign.
Be in that same,
the NFL word that same for you position. No longer work here.
When you're watching that, Brian, do you just want to run through the TV and get back out there when you're watching something like that?
No. Well, heck no. I mean, their defense looked so tired the second half. You know, they were on the field a bunch the first half, but a whole bunch in the second half as well. They looked so tired on defense. I don't miss those days. Being on the field for 80 plays, that's for damn sure.
You know what's weird, though?
It was hard to watch.
I saw panic. You know, and you know, how do you see panic when a guy's helmet's on? They look like they were planning the party in the third quarter because they dominated the Patriots completely. And sure, it's the best quarterback ever, and Tom Brady gets in rhythm, you're going to have problems. But those guys look checked out. There were guys so wide open, I could have caught the pass.
Yeah, the first half they had pressure on Brady. Well, the guys were fresh. The D-line was getting after him. They were pressuring him. They got the pick six. In the second half, they just looked worn out. You know, they were done.
What did you think of Lady Gaga's halftime show?
Awesome. You guys
totally. Yeah. It was unbelievable.
Yeah,
I'm kidding?
A huge fan of halftime shows. You know, was it Katy Perry last year or 2 years ago? And then it was Bruno Mars in New York. A lot of that.
Oh, he was great.
You know, I, as a player, I never really watched the halftime because I was like, all right, halftime, let's go. I'll do something. Let's get a drink. Let's do something. But now I'm like, all right, halftime show. Let's go. Let's watch the show, kids. A little different now.
Yeah, a little bit different, right? And you can still do it horizontally. You know, there's a story that came out last week. Michael Irvin left the halftime Jerry Jones pep talk. I think it was in the second Super Bowl because he wanted to see Michael Jackson. He ran up the tunnel.
That's pretty good. I mean, as a player, you kind of get gypped.
Yeah.
You know, all these awesome performers at halftime, and you don't get to watch them.
Yeah, you didn't.
In the locker room. And what for 45 minutes, what are you going to do? You know, you go in there, your coach tells you, we're going to do that. And that takes 5 minutes. And you sit there and do nothing the rest of the time. You try and eat oranges or hydrate, whatever it is, to keep your mind busy.
You know who did halftime at your Super Bowl, right?
Prince, yeah.
Yeah, one of the great shows of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Prince in the Rain.
Amazing, in the rain.
Yeah, and by the way, this Lady Gaga show was done in Katy Perry's cleavage. A lot of people haven't been talking about that.
That's not true. Could have been.
So made it all the more entertaining. Hey, I know you got to go talk to Pat Tomasulo. You know his hair is not real, right?
It's not?
No, just grab that and just start ripping on it. You'll see.
Let me take a yank of it. Okay, yeah. I'll find out for my own.
You got anything else you want to throw out social media-wise, or enough people following you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Would you like to be able to say that?
Good talking to you, buddy. Thank you.
Actually, is my social media consultant. She does a good job with that.
All right, good. Good talking to you, man. All the best.
All right, guys. Thanks. See you.
See you later. Brian Urlacher. Brian Campbell coming up, and then Dave will do your Hawkopedia here in a little bit. John DeCosta and I have another stand-up show coming up we got to tell you about, and you're going to do showbiz one story anyway. You're going to give me a choice in
I'm
just
I'm going to give you three choices, yeah.
All right, first this, $25 million, that's how many MyPillows have been sold over the last 12 years. They're really that good. MyPillow has built a business on a foundation of helping people sleep better, all while making each pillow right here in the USA. So ditch the flat, worn-out pillow you've been sleeping on for years and try a MyPillow. If your pillow is like sleeping on olive oil, you need, and I don't mean the olive oil. I mean the olive oil from Popeye. You need to bend that, shape that any way you want that. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think Andrea remembers olive oil.
I do. Mm. Yeah, I remember Popeye ate the spinach and olive oil was
the
girlfriend.
Oh, okay. I was
trying
to give you a break.
800-299-9579 is going to get you the MyPillow 4-pack special. You're saying, Steve, what's that? Let me tell you. You get two standard premium MyPillows, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get the two go-anywhere pillows. You get four. It's $109.98. You're going to be set for MyPillows till the cows come home and try to take a nap.
With olive oil.
MyPillow is so confident that you're going to love it. They're going to give you a 60-day money-back guarantee. Sleep on it. If you don't believe it's the absolute best pillow out there, return it for a full refund. 800-299-9579 or MyPillow.com. Use a promo code WGN. All right, so you have a three-selection choice for me.
All right, you wanted one story, so here are your choices. Do you want to know why Taylor Swift's ex, why he wore that TS T-shirt? Do you want to know who on This Is Us, Milo Ventimiglia, surprised a fan at home?
Okay.
Or who was Lady Gaga performing with at the Grammys?
You know, I'm a Swiftie, as you know.
Yeah.
And a big fan of This Is Us. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go with selection three, Gaga. Give me a Gaga.
Any guess, any thought of who she might be performing with at the
Grammys? Well, I mean, the obvious choice would be Tony Bennett, but mm-hmm. Is that not it?
This is who it is.
Oh, yeah. So it is Tony Bennett.
It's Metallica.
Air Supply.
Gaga and Metallica.
Gaga and Metallica teaming up to perform at the Grammys this Sunday. She actually tweeted a little promo clip saying, I'm duetting with Metallica on Sunday.
Wow. Chick likes rock and roll.
Yeah. I like Metallica. They're good.
All right. And thank you for that. And maybe we get Dean to cut down to one story.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Dean's scheduled to reappear with Pete and Andre and everybody tomorrow and Thursday. I will be back, or tomorrow and Friday. I'll be back on Monday. John, where is our next show?
Our next show is going to be in downtown Arlington Heights at the Metropolis Theater.
I like that theater.
I know. It's a beautiful little theater. I'm so glad we're back there. And we're going to be doing it with our lovely Andrea Darlis.
I'm excited.
Doing her stand up again, which she killed the first time. So you need to come out and see her. But you can get tickets. Go to.
Does this include the Greeks that are coming for Andrea?
Yes. Yes.
Are there still tickets? Hey, yes. I have to somehow fill the stands. I have to stack it.
Yeah. The stands.
Yeah. They're actually going to be sitting at
the stands.
I didn't hear that.
The high school gym.
The bleachers. Yeah.
Her family will be at the Arlington Park racetrack.
That's probably true.
Yes. So, but that's April 8th, 7:30. You can go to metropolisarts.com or you can call the box office directly at 844. 847-577-2121. Downtown Arlington Heights, April 8th. It's going to be great.
Get your tickets. Thank you. Sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks. The 8 o'clock hour continues. Big story next.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1. The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
.842, and we continue with our friend Brian Campbell. Is Sue ready? You standing by?
Okay.
Brian Campbell joins us now. And listen, he's been one of the best defensemen in hockey for years. But let's be honest, what everybody's talking about is soup and a sandwich. Good morning, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, Steve. How are you doing?
I understand there's a new episode today at noon.
That's what they're telling me, yeah. So I think we'll see what happens. I kind of forget them now with what we filmed. So.
How many are in the can?
There's 5 in the can.
And is this the proudest work you've done outside of hockey?
Correct. Yes. Very proud.
You know, he could be eligible for an Emmy because it's like a Chicago Emmy Award.
I think he's eligible for Emmy's sister, Emma. Yeah, it's a different award. Yes. And we can see the new episode at noon and the collection of episodes on the Blackhawks website, right?
Yeah. It's kind of nice how they're waiting to, they don't just fire them all out there for everybody just to see. So it's lots of suspense going with it.
Well, but that's the thing, Soup, because, you know, it could go one of two ways. You either release the whole season and then people can binge watch, or you release them one at a time. I'm with you, though. I like the one at a time. Make people wait a little bit. Build the excitement.
Yeah, for sure. You got to get people talking.
And again, it's our Temi Panarin, the bread man, with Brian Campbell. Soup and a sandwich.
The filming had to be grueling, right?
Oh, unbelievable. Location shoots, it's crazy. Who's doing your stunt work?
All myself. I do it every day.
What?
Wow.
What?
Yeah. You've done stunt work for Denzel. You could be Soup's stunt double.
Well, I have, and for Kevin Costner back in the day as well. Now, those days are a little past for me, but I was Kevin Costner's ass in a couple of his movies. So, Brian Campbell from your Chicago Blackhawks. A lot of time on the road, buddy. How are you guys getting along?
We're good. We actually stopped in at home for 18 hours or something. Mm-hmm. So, change the suitcase out and see the family quick. But it's good. This trip, you know, it's been a big road trip for us. So. Obviously, we got an exciting game tonight against Minnesota that we got to find a way, and then off to Canada. So it's been fun, and we've had a good time. Obviously, you're on the road for the Super Bowl. It's kind of nice to be together. So it's been good.
Dave Ennett's here. Say hi to television and National Hockey League star Brian Soup Campbell.
Hey, Brian, good morning. The win over Dallas, how significant was that, the way you guys won that game, and it was such a back-and-forth kind of a game?
Yeah, you know, I feel like we're starting to play some really good hockey. I think our forward lines are starting to roll and our intensity levels going up. And I felt that game, we played a really good game, and then all of a sudden we were kind of behind there in the third. But I felt if we stuck with it the way we were playing, we were going to have some success. So there's a lot of good things out of that game that we liked. And even the game before against Phoenix, I know we had a little – dull stretch there in the second, but our first period was probably one of our best periods of the season. So we're going to have that tonight as well.
Is this the toughest stretch of the year? You know, the dog days of August in baseball, this stretch into February before you really crank it up in March to finish the season. Is it any tougher than other parts of the season?
You know, I think maybe like, what are we now, middle of early February? Yeah, it might be a little tougher, but I don't know. I think right now we're focused on 30 games left, and I know we have less than that now, but to really put a push on to see what this team's all about, and it kind of makes it exciting. So I think it helps, too. You're on the road. You know, it's nice to be around the guys and get away from the distractions and everything. So kind of brings everybody together, and you know, I think it gets everybody excited.
Anybody on a team a pain when you travel? Like they're always borrowing stuff, or they're always forgetful. You know, hey Soup, you got this. Hey Soup, you got that. Because you're one of the leaders on the team.
Yeah, I forgot my. Well, I couldn't find my tie the other day, so maybe I'm the guy. Doesn't happen too often. So then I have to send out a text message to the group if anybody's got an extra tie. I ended up finding my tie, but I had to borrow one before that. So I think it's fun. We always kind of stick together that way, so it's been good.
I like the idea that he has one tie. I mean, I know he has more, but to me, I like the idea that Soup's got one tie. Couldn't find my tie.
We pack for the road minimal as can be. I think, sure. You know, it's amazing what you look at the guys and you're gone for 2 weeks and you got a little bag here. Wow, geez. But who wants to carry it around all the time? So bring enough underwear and you're good to go.
I don't want to tell you and Panarin how to do TV because clearly you're experts. But maybe an episode on packing for trips, huh? Right?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. There's, I'm sure there's lots of ideas out there. So I don't know what's going to happen with this show. It depends what's, if we film more or what, but, I don't know.
He's hoping he gets picked up for a spring season.
You have to film more.
Well, he's hoping he gets picked up. He hasn't heard yet.
I think it's hilarious.
Yeah. We haven't been picked up. I think, you know, what I'm excited about is Breadman has a little bit more of a role coming up. So, as he should, you know, he's been on for three episodes now and, right. And, I'm going to allow him to speak a little bit more on my show.
Right. You won't understand it, but he'll be speaking more. And Soup and I also talked about a story arc for Breadman's character where maybe you'd get him a love interest in a cute neighbor kid.
Or a puppy.
Because originally they were going to call it This Is Us, and then NBC stole the title. So a lot of people
haven't seen that. I have not seen that show, but my wife is watching.
Yeah, well, there you go. One more thought from you, David.
Well, yeah, just back to hockey real quick.
What?
I hate to put TV on the back burner here, but this game against Minnesota, the Wild has had the Blackhawks number. You haven't been part of all of that, Brian, but you did play them a couple weeks ago at the United Center. And then Winnipeg. And Winnipeg is also a team which has given the Blackhawks a lot of trouble. How significant against two division teams on the road are these next two games?
Yeah, you know, they're important. I think we have four games left against Minnesota, and we're going to have to win. You know, we're going to have to go probably over 500 if we want to try and catch these guys. So I think tonight's the big first step in that way. So Winnipeg, yeah, we have struggled. I felt like we played pretty good against them last game against the United Center. So I know we gave up some late goals there, and hopefully we can gain some confidence off of that one. So, yeah, it's definitely where I know we're focused tonight first, but it's definitely going to be a big road trip because we have a week off after this. So it's we want to try and gain these points. So not a lot of teams are catching us during that week off.
And don't forget, end of the month, the Hawks come back for two, and there's a few more home games in March leading into the playoffs prior to the Stanley Cup parade. But you know me, I don't like to get ahead of myself. A brand new episode of Soup and a Sandwich coming up today at noon. That's your official release. A lot of you around town are going to be having parties, watch parties. A lot of you taking the afternoon off, you know, to watch Soup and a Sandwich and kick back. And
we
who
should
could blame
carry
you?
That live. I mean, we carry so many important
we'll break into programming
events to carry
yeah.
that.
Yeah, we should break into programming. Yeah, I think that's definitely a good idea. Dave?
No, I'm going to watch.
Yeah, of course you are.
I had a lunch scheduled. I'm canceling it.
Of course you are. Yeah. That's exactly right.
I definitely appreciate that, guys. You guys canceling, making time for this.
Yeah, have the girls watched the show yet, your daughters?
Yeah, they're my three-year-old, three-and-a-half-year-old now. She is pretty surprised to see Daddy on the computer.
That's pretty exciting. Yeah. And wait, in a few years when she's old enough to realize how dumb the whole thing is, then she'll really appreciate it.
It's dumb. It's not dumb. Then she's not going to claim that I'm her dad.
Thanks, buddy. Stay healthy, and let's get one against those Wild.
Okay, thanks. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
See you, man. Brian Campbell.
There he goes.
Couldn't be a better guy. All right, coming up next hour, Donald Trump says the U.S. murder rate is the highest in 47 years and takes another swing at Chicago. By the way, it's not. And he did. Jake Tapper got in a big a brouhaha with Kellyanne Conway yesterday on CNN. And Donald Trump is also in an interview from Moscow in 2013 where the Miss Universe pageant was held, talking about Vladimir Putin, where he says, I do have a relationship with him. A couple days ago, he said, you don't know him. I mean, which one is it?
Well,
sponsored by Wintrust Community Bank.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Woo! Woo!
Ow!
Love that money.
Nine 11 coming up, I don't know, 30 minutes or so. Another Undercover John, where John goes to work for a listener's business, a business called Clay Space in Lyle. Pottery people.
Cool.
The pottery people are in the house.
Oh, boy. I want to know what John made.
Yeah, it'd be nice if he made something for the show.
And was someone sitting behind him when he made it?
That like in Ghost?
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was Whoopi Goldberg.
Did anything break?
I thought you were going to say it was Patrick Swayze.
I don't know if we want to give all that up on the air, you know, if he broke something. That could be the whole highlight of the deal.
Sure. I hear the video is very funny.
Okay. That's what you hear. Clay Space in Lyle. We'll find out more about those folks coming up. 912, the great Elise Glink standing by, thinkglink.com. She knows real estate and money inside out. I didn't know you knew health insurance.
I do. I know a little bit about health insurance. I, have had to buy it for the last, 28 years of my career.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you in a corporation? In corporation.
Are you
a corporation?
Yes, I'm an Inc. I also have an LLC, maybe even two, collecting companies left and right.
So that's easier to buy health insurance than, say, a freelancer, right?
Well, so here's what happened. We bought independently our own family coverage for these years, right, up until a year and a half ago when Blue Cross Blue Shield said that they were pulling out of the individual coverage market. And through the time that I've had ThinkLink, Inc., which is our company.
That would be your incorporation.
That's the incorporation, right?
Uh-huh.
We'd been giving our employees a stipend in order to buy health insurance that basically covered a lot of their premiums and some other things.
Okay.
And when Blue Cross Blue Shield changed its rules, we, like 200,000 other people who were buying it that way in the state of Illinois, realized we had to do something else, and so we decided to provide health insurance for our entire company and just switch it around. And so we bought a small business policy. And it was the only way to get the coverage and the doctors and everything that we needed. But we went from paying a whole lot of money to a real whole lot of money.
So was that an offshoot of Obamacare, or was it because of something else?
It's a little bit hard to know. What's going on now is that the entire insurance market is so uncertain of where we're going with Obamacare or the ACA that nobody's sure. And the deadline is coming up, and I think it's in May, when they have to decide if they're going to participate in the ACA for 2018 and 2019. And unfortunately, since we don't know where the Republicans are going with this, and it looks like a repeal and replace on the same day, first 10 days in office isn't really happening. Oh, we're past that now. Isn't happening so fast. It's very hard for the insurance companies to know. So what they're trying to do is backfill any potential risk that they have in the different level of coverages that they have. And nobody really knows what to do, is my understanding.
Yeah, so this idea that politically we promised you we'd do this and we're going to do it anyway, and damn the torpedoes, a phrase I never really understood, by the way. the net effect is what you're talking about for your business and people all over the country. And even if it just turns out to be excessive stress, where your world doesn't necessarily change, maybe it costs you some more money, but you still have health care. The idea that these selfish creeps in Washington are doing this, again, because the Democrats have done it in the past, now it's a Republican's turn, to people all over the country under the guise of doing the right thing, it's just a big steaming pile of BS.
Yeah, it seems that the Republicans have come up against what I think the Democrats fought against in the first 6 months or year of Obama's presidency, where this whole idea that of the mandate, which is what I don't understand is the conflict, right? It's okay for the states to have a mandate. Like, you have to have driver's insurance, right? Auto insurance,
right,
or you can't drive a car.
Right.
In, I think, 49 of the 50 states. So somehow it's okay to have a mandate for that, but it's not okay to have a mandate for health insurance. And I'm not sure, I know people will probably call you and go, she's an idiot. It's federal versus state. But the point is that you're required to do it because that's what makes it affordable for everybody.
Right.
And so the Republicans are coming up against this idea of a mandate, and they're fighting amongst themselves because the real to the right Republicans, hard to imagine that now, they don't like the idea of any mandate, whereas the more moderate side of the right Republicans are saying, oh, but the numbers don't work otherwise. And so it's interesting to watch them come up against this qualm, and how they're going to solve it is going to be so detrimental to everybody.
It's the great cowardice of politics.
Yeah.
Taxes. What do you mean? I can't make people pay more. Then I won't keep my job. The fact is, you have to find a way to fund things. That's why Obamacare is in the mess it's in now, along with the fact that it was a big bill that had some incredibly good things in it, small though they may have been. And those 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 pieces that the Republicans are going to save is fine. But if we had just fixed Medicare back in the day, none of this would have happened anyway.
Right. And what happened with Medicare was, of course, George Bush is the one who expanded it and took care of the donut hole and the prescription coverage, which was hugely expensive to do, but really the right thing to do. And so at every point in time in a presidency since I've been alive, which is now, you know, low these many decades, you've seen a president actually stand up and do the right thing for people at some point in time, and they just get a whole lot of grief for it.
Right.
And it's hard to imagine how this president, who doesn't even like it when people criticize his tie color, mm-hmm, is going to have the fortitude to be able to do that.
Elise, if it is, I guess, rescinded, or I don't want to say revoked, but just revisited, if anything.
We hear the new phrase, repeal and repair.
Repeal and repair.
Right.
If that happens, if it goes into effect, say miraculously the Republicans come up with the fix, will we see premiums, copays, prescription drug costs, deductibles all go down, or is that just a myth?
Okay, you're never going to see anything go down in healthcare because every year healthcare goes up. But what we've seen under Obamacare are the slowest increases in the last, 20, 30, 40 years of health insurance coverage. Obamacare has managed to really slow it down. And I think that if you can get it from where you're at 10 or 15 or 20% increases a year to 4%, you're not at the rate of inflation, you're pretty darn close. Now, it doesn't mean there aren't problems with the system, and it doesn't mean the costs don't go up. They do, but you know, there are ways to hold down costs, particularly when everybody's involved in the system. And that's why universal coverage has always been something that, you know, European nations have done and other modern nations have done, because that is one way to really hold down costs. It's like Medicare for all.
So moving on from this to that, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are making a little bit of news today in the housing business. Why?
Interesting. The New York Times reported that Fannie Mae has guaranteed $1 billion of debt backed by a company owned by Blackstone that in the single-family rental business. And the New York Times said, well, they're making a big leap into the growing home rental market. But the truth is that Fannie and Freddie have been backing rental properties for decades. They are the Fannie Mae in particular, but Freddie Mac too. Fannie is the biggest lender to multifamily housing buildings. So you'll see big buildings go up, and they're all for rent, all the apartments, and Fannie Mae, you know, is guaranteeing the loan. And so what I think the New York Times was getting at rather inartfully is that this is the one time they're making a big move into single-family rental market space, but it's financed exactly the same way as all these other properties. So I think the story's a little bit unfair to Fannie Mae. They've been doing this a long time. The single-family rentals, though, are very controversial and a big holdover, leftover holdover from the housing crisis.
You can find out more about your money and how to make more and keep more and all the other information that Elise Glink is willing to give you. And by the way, she won't give it all up. Some of it, you have to know the password.
Most of it, she will.
Yeah, almost
She's
all
a giver.
ThinkGlink.com, your key to success and less stress. ThinkGlink.com. Thank you.
See you soon.
All right, and let's do this. 9:20, we'll take a break, come back. Dave has a Hawkopedia, and I'll play a little sound from the wild world of President Trump from yesterday as well. And then it's off to Pottery Land, where John invaded a lovely business called Clay Space, and we'll find out if they're okay. The women from Clay Space are here today. Bill and Wendy at 10 on 720 WGN.
Blackhawks Radio.
720 WGN.
Uh-huh.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Hawk.
Chicago.
Opedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
Hawkopedia is sponsored by Freshwave, the official de-stinkifier of your Chicago Blackhawks. Sandberg, what do you know about this product?
Freshwave sent me a gift basket of Freshwave products.
Why? What stinks in your life?
My stepson's hockey bag.
Oh.
And so I'd asked Steve Godsell, our sales guy, about it, and I thought he was just going to give me something for the hockey bag, and he sent me every product they have, which is amazing. But I got the little packs that you throw in the bag. They're like a little mesh pouch with really good smelling stuff, and it's a game changer.
Hockey equipment is nasty.
Yeah,
it's nasty.
You know, they sent me a little gift pack when my dog got skunked last fall.
I have.
Remember that?
They gave me dog stuff, too. So yeah, I'm going to keep it in my house for when my sister's dog comes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. John on stage, John DeCoste, you talk about how teenage boys smell. Shouldn't they come up with a line of clothing for teenage boys just made out of Fresh Wave material?
Oh, yeah, like a shirt or pants, just all of Fresh Wave.
Right.
Like a time release deodorant under the arm for the t-shirt or something.
Or just bubble wrap that doesn't allow any funk out.
Yeah, so.
All right, so thank you, Fresh Wave.
Thank you to the team Fresh Wave and Brian Tapella. That's who sent it to me.
Okay,
so
and remember the slogan, Fresh Wave, something smells funky in here. Remember that?
That's the slogan. That was it.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, what are you teaching us today?
Well, yesterday we got the news the Boston Bruins have released their longest tenured coach in the National Hockey League.
Claude Julien.
Yes. He was in his 10th year. That move left the Blackhawks' Joel Quenneville as the longest tenured coach now in the National Hockey League.
Is he in his 10th year?
He is in his...
I'm not bored by you. I just don't.
No, I know how that goes. He's in his ninth season as the Blackhawks coach. Of course, he's also the second winningest coach in NHL history. That doesn't hurt when it comes to job tenure. And
but you mentioned yesterday, too, the Blues coach, who's done a lot of winning.
Ken Hitchcock.
He hasn't got it done, but he's done a lot of winning. It's a tough game.
It is a very tough profession. There have been four coaches fired this year. But we were wondering... As the 37th coach in franchise history, where does Q rank with his tenure among Blackhawks coaches? He is second all-time among Blackhawks mentors, behind only Billy Ray, the winningest coach in Blackhawks history, who coached the team for 14 seasons from 1963 to 1976 when he was fired, I think on Christmas Eve.
Sweet.
Ray coached the Blackhawks to 516 victories.
Well, Q's got to be getting close to that, right?
He has 395 with the Hawks.
Oh, just 395.
Of course, he has many more than that over 800. He has wins with the Blues and the Avalanche. His points percentage, .647. His winning percentage with the Blackhawks, .613. Bob Pulford is third in wins. He coached the Hawks for parts of seven seasons over a 23-year span. As for other major pro sports, Greg Popovich in the NBA with the San Antonio Spurs in his 20th year. He is the dean of all professional coaches. Bill Belichick is the longest tenured coach in the NFL. Mike Socia in baseball. But Quenneville leads the NHL. And just a footnote, between 2000 and 2008, when Joel was hired, the Blackhawks had five different head coaches. Only had one since.
Yeah, seems like it's working out for him.
I think it is.
Again, your Hawkopedia is sponsored by Freshwave. Remember their slogan? I don't know how you spell that. It's 928, back after this on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Here's John's song.
There's a guy who comes right to your workplace. He keeps a fake mustache inside his briefcase. But everyone he meets all know there ain't no cover for him to blow. They all just pray he won't be back tomorrow.
Come on, sing along, in other words.
I wrote them. I should know them.
Undercover John. Another fine business risked their future by inviting John to come in and play. Lee Ristow and Margaret Fazio, or Margie Fazio are here. Margie. How are you guys?
Great.
Nice to see you. What are two lovely women doing hanging out with John? What's wrong with you two?
I don't know. It was a strange day.
All right. Where is Clay Space?
We are in Lisle, Illinois.
Yeah, we're in Lisle.
740 Front Street, right across from the Lisle Library.
Ah, very good. Very good. And what does Clay Space do?
We are an arts organization where we have 55 resident artists who pay a monthly fee to be able to work and play in clay. And we also offer custom classes, and we also offer kids classes. We have all around arts community.
And one thing John told me right away, he said, I thought I'd come in and there'd be a bunch of ashtrays with a
yes,
like a kid's name on the side of them. You're blown away at the level of the art.
Absolutely,
right?
Blown. They have a gallery that is at the front, and I hit it on the way back. It was unbelievable. I actually purchased a little item that was made by a resident artist. And actually, Margie made a couple of things that I took home as well. It just blew me away. Absolutely gorgeous.
And actually, we have some gifts for you today We brought some mugs in for you guys to drink your coffee. So.
Did John make these gifts? Only because I want to know how much coffee he had.
It takes some time to make pottery. Wow. And the bowls that John made, and he did make two bowls while he was there, and they actually look like bowls, which was really nice. They are in the kiln as we speak, being fired for the first time. All pieces of pottery take two firings. So when somebody says they want something tomorrow, unless we already have it made, it's not happening.
I didn't know that. So once you finish the particular piece, it needs a couple of days.
It needs several days to dry, then another 24 hours to fire, and then another firing of 24 hours with glaze on it. Yeah. So,
Steve, since the kiln has only had two firings, you probably know how to handle that pretty well, right?
Yeah, but again, I'm more of the ghost sort of thing. And yeah, I don't actually do the pottery. I sit behind the person on the front by the wheel. How do you both come to this business?
I'm the volunteer marketing director of Clay Space. And when I heard about John doing Undercover John, I said, I've got to send him an email. It sounds like a fabulous opportunity for Clay Space.
And were there customers in when he came in today? What do you call them? Clients, partners? What do you call
them? Well, it depends. Our people who pay the fees are called resident artists. Those are our members.
I don't want to insult anybody.
That's okay. And we're run kind of like a co-op, so that the entire operation is run by volunteers.
Okay.
We pay a fee to be able to play with the clay, but we also have to commit to time and effort to keep the studio operating.
And everybody's responsible to do their part then, right?
Right.
The hippie commune that you two are clearly
pretty
around.
Pretty much, yeah. You got it. From everything from cleaning toilets to loading kilns, I mean, seriously, we do it all.
Well, how do you know about pottery? Are you an artist?
Kind of late. I was in my 50s when I decided I was still looking to find myself. You're right about the hippie stuff.
Yeah.
I was looking to find myself, and I took a class at COD and started in pottery.
Fell in love right away.
Fell in love. That was my thing.
But isn't it one of the hardest art forms? I would think. I mean, isn't it? No?
I don't know.
It takes time.
I think drawing is harder.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. How do you get the bright colors?
Glazes.
Oh, they're all glazes.
Glazes, okay. Mostly. Except for sometimes when they're not glazes.
John didn't need spray paint or anything.
No.
All right, before we get to what John did or didn't do, when people come out to Clay Space, this gallery, John, that you mentioned up front, at any given time, you'll see artists' work in there that has been made at your place?
Yes. Every month we change the show out in the gallery. We have a new show that comes in. This Friday, our reception is for our white, black, and red show. So everything in the gallery is pretty much white, black, and red.
Thus the title, huh? Marketing?
Right.
All right, so
we keep it simple.
So, well, that's good because my friend John is living in that zone. All right, have you ever tried pottery?
I've never have tried pottery. Well,
let's start artistically.
Anything.
Do you ever tried finger painting?
I did finger painting, yes. Uh-huh. I did finger painting. I will say this. We did Undercover John years ago.
Yeah.
This is the second time around. I have never had as much fun as I did that day
Oh, no, nice.
At Clay Space. And I'm not kidding.
Thank you.
They were phenomenal. I did. I got to sit at, I don't know, the wheel.
The wheel.
And I made a bowl, and it's amazing. They were like a hockey puck, a tuna can, or something like this. And then you're pressing, and your thumbs have to go this way. And my leg was in, it was outside at one point. And I couldn't, I didn't know what I was doing. But then you're pumping with the gas pedal. Then I had a, something, it was unbelievable.
So you have no idea what you did.
I don't know, but I'm telling you, it was... It. I made a bowl.
Have you?
I mean, it won't hold anything, but I made
a
bowl.
Have you done
this,
Potter?
It will.
I've never. No, I've never done pottery.
What's the pedal pumping about?
You make the wheel go faster, slower, depending because it's spinning around like this.
Oh, depending on what sort of shape you want to create.
Well, no, depending on what process.
Play along.
You're
I'm
doing.
The host.
Okay.
No.
I'll try.
No, depending on what I'm saying.
Depending on. What you're trying to accomplish at the time, whether
okay.
you're pulling up, whether you're centering, whether whatever it
well,
is.
Well, does speed create height? I mean, if
no,
you want to make something.
Hands
your hands
that.
Do that.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I don't have a clue.
don't you well, wait till you see the, if you're going to see the video, wait till you see it. You'll see.
By the way, the video's up.
Oh, the video is up. Yes, cool. Yes.
So you can go
today into cause.
Today into cause on right. YouTube, right. And also if it's not already posted,
we'll have a link to it on the WGN website.
Yeah, and also at Twitter at Cochran Show. And it's a WGN now, but we'll put it up on Twitter and Facebook as well. All right, so what about the water? Don't you have to add water?
Oh, lots
oh,
of
yeah.
water.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you're throwing, you need water, and you usually need some tools along with your hands to create anything on the wheel.
It's a messy job. It's muddy.
I took a shower, right after.
But it was awkward because he took it at their space.
Yeah.
Right. And we don't have a shower.
Yeah. So that was wrong.
And it was in the middle of the room.
What are some of the fancy tools called?
We have things called ribs. Probes,
needle
sponges,
tool.
Needle tools.
These guys would be perfect for shop talk,
right? Oh my god, big time!
Yeah, because we
needles,
know what you're talking
making
about.
Making bowls,
but we went right from there to make. I made handles.
Made a handle.
Handles, which is hysterical on the video because it's a process. It's a process that is almost illegal, I would say. But
because
it's
of how they appear.
Oh yes, exactly. Yes, and then but the water and the she was what was the young the
Nancy Barnes.
Nancy, who was
one of our
so funny.
Artists.
She was so good.
We're
helping
looking at
me make
we're
it.
Looking at your video here. We're looking at a screen grab from your video. Your bowl looks pretty good, dude.
Yeah.
Well, now keep it. The
well, we
lady
had,
who helped me first.
We had Kate
Kelty.
Kate Kelty helping him, and she's one of our instructors, and obviously an excellent instructor. Because
so did he cheat on his test then, or something?
Well, she helped a little.
Okay.
Bit.
Did he sneeze into his hands?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's part of making pottery. Apparently.
Well, I did. I was and I did get a lot of clay on my face. There was a lot of clay on my face.
You do have clay on your face.
Yeah, I do have clay on my face.
Now, is this open to all ages?
Yes. Well, we kind of cut it off about 8 years old for the youngest end because of the ability to deal with the clay and whatever. But we even have birthday parties, though, we've had for some younger kids because we offer parties with our custom classes.
Oh, that's a cool idea.
Can we do an outing there, guys?
Absolutely could do an outing.
Mary, I think that would be a great idea.
That sounds cool. I want to know what you're doing under the sink here when you're rinsing that. Is that
that is
handle?
Pulling,
that's
handle.
The handle.
Pulling the handle.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah. That's why it can only be. This is an NSFW video, apparently.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
That's pulling the handle. Yes.
What is the most complicated piece to make?
Probably a teapot is considered one of the most complicated.
That's interesting because you're a little teapot.
I am. Short and stout.
Yeah. hang on. I want to talk to you more in a second because I want people to know that Clay Space is an artist in residence kind of situation.
We call them resident artists. I mean, they're not actually.
If I said anything, you have it corrected. I'm just checking.
I'm sorry.
It's an artist organization.
It's my teacher background. What can
on
I say?
It's Clay Space in Lyle. Address again.
740 Front Street. Right across from the Lyle Library.
But if people are curious, do they call you? What's the best thing to do? Go to the website?
We have clayspace.net
at
the website, and our phone number is 393-630-393-2529.
All right, we'll come back. More in a second on 720 WGN. Pete McMurray for me the next couple of days. I'll be back on Monday having some laughs with Lee and Margie in from Clay Space, clayspace.net in Lyle. Undercover John went out to Clay Space and made stuff. You got a clip you want to play?
We have an audio clip. Yeah, let's play this. Yeah. We were talking as we set this up, as we started out.
All right, here's a clip.
We have 55 resident artists here now that pay a fee, monthly, quarterly fee, to be able to do their work out of the studio.
Can I have that clock?
No. We also have students. We have about 10 to 12 classes per session. We run 5 sessions a year.
Those markers, can I play with them, or is that, can I take those home?
No, and John, I think you need to focus on the interview now, okay? Focus. And we have many students, about 60 a session. We have lots of activities that go on throughout the year.
You're a huge disappointment in so many ways.
I know. But you were so good. Lee was so good at playing. That was so fun.
All right, so when these bowls are ready, then we'll put them up on the web with our other stuff, right?
Great.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
All right, let me ask you this. If John were to sell these bowls, take the celebrity out of it. If John were to sell these bowls, what would they be worth?
$2.
$2? $2 bowls?
Maybe. It depends on how well we glaze them. Maybe $5.
That's tall money. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think they're being really nice.
Do you know what I'm saying? That is tall money.
Well, John, if you could figure out a way to make 500-600 of these a week, you would have yourself quite a second job.
I could actually pull this out. It would be fun to do. It would be absolutely fun to do. And I got to empty a, am I saying this right, kiln?
A kiln.
Yes. Kiln.
Yeah, K-I-L-N. Yes. Kiln.
Yeah.
Some people do pronounce it as a kill, though, actually.
I was getting a couple of different things that day. So
from
I got
the mob on the gallery.
Yes, right.
It sounds like fun. Any last thoughts from you on John's appearance?
He did great. He was phenomenal.
It was fun.
Yeah, but you guys are nice.
We had such a good time. We really did.
What's this big thing coming up in April?
We have our big spring festival. Twice a year we have a big open house kind of activity. And in April we have our spring festival. We'll be doing a Raccoo Fest on Saturday, which is a special kind of firing.
I was going to say, it's all like Latin. I don't understand.
Yeah, things get all flamey and it's really cool.
That'll be great for the Greeks.
And that's a fundraiser.
Bring some cheese in.
We might try to eat it. Yeah, that sounds great.
And that will be our fundraiser part of the activity. We'll be selling individual pieces that will be donated by our resident artists that people can come and buy one for $10. Very cool. You glaze it, we fire it on the spot, and you get it to take home with you.
We should auction off your bowls for the for Claysmas.
Oh, I would, because if people need toll money, so what do they call in if they need toll money?
You know what? I'm going to start the bidding at $3.
$3. That's why I love you.
Say what? I'm up at $5 right now. Lee, Margie, great meeting you. And by the way, they have something called Try the Wheel, which would be great because if you go online at clayspace.net, you can see more about this. But you get to come out for free, see what you think of it, maybe decide to have your party or whatever.
I say we do it.
Okay.
So fun.
We'd love to have you.
ClaySpace, thank you guys. Thank you guys for coming down. Thank you for not arresting John. ClaySpace.net. Bill and Wendy next.